Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello guys, welcome to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host Tony Evans, the first of the new year 2024. I hope you had a good New Year's Eve, had a good safe and enjoyable night, and the hangovers you're nursing this week. Knowing anyone my age, it's a week's worth of hangovers, but the young ones out there, they won't even know what it means, would they really? But anyway, I hope it was worth it. You kept safe, you had fun, and you managed to say goodbye to 2023, which was an interesting year for all of us, was it not? Anyway, I had a trying to think of what I would do for the first episode or episodes of 2024 when my good friend Millsy reached out to me just before Christmas and said, hey, why don't you do an episode on what makes a good opening live song? What song would what makes a set good? What should a band open with? How should it open with it? Should it be new? Should it be old? Should it be a banger? And I thought to myself, that's a really good metaphor for the new year. Let's open the new year with a two-episode series. And we're going to do it, and it's the opening songs to your favourite live gigs. Now, what I did was, I sort of had to extrapolate that slightly, and then once I'd done that and sat down at a rest, I did some more. No, I extrapolated once. Oh, I got very sweaty. I had to think, what should I do? So I thought I would look at and deep dive into live albums that I have. So it had to be, the caveat had to be that the first part, the first show, is going to be live albums that I have in my collection, and ones you can easily get on all streaming platforms, or as many as I could work out, because it's no good me saying, hey, this live opening song from this band as a bootleg that only I've got four copies of, or, you know, there's only four copies of it and you can't hear it, is a bit useless to me, you as the audience, or to you. So you can't go and say, oh, Tony said listen to this, and I couldn't. So that's what I did. So it had to be what I own, and if I didn't own it, could I stream it quite easily and tick, tick, tick on all the boxes. Now, so for me, after conversation, I had conversation with good friends, I had conversation with Millsy, I had conversation with my wife. And it's a funny old sort of dichotomy, right? When you go to see a band live, and the opening song, it will it and does it sort of sculpt the rest of the show? Interesting to say if it does or not. I personally don't want to start off with an absolute banger. I have to say, I like to start off with something I know that I'm pretty happy, like we all know quite well. But I think I like the show to, you know, reach a crescendo, hit those big bangers, and then, you know, come down a bit and go right out again at the end. Whereas Millsy, in the conversation I had with him, he likes the show to open up with an absolute scorcher. And same, to be fair, is does my wife. She says the same. And I think, you know, I can go both ways, but I'm in the different camp. We can't all be in the same camp, right? So I look at it this way. I agree with what Millsy and Karen saying, that you know, start where you mean to go on, a great big banger, get the show, get the old blood pump in, the crowd rocking and rolling. I do, I see that. But I don't want my favourite song straight up. You know, like when you have a nice meal and you're sitting there and on your plate, you know, you've got that one particular thing that you like, and with me it's like my roast potatoes or my Yorkshire puddings or whatever, you know. I'm often going to put those and have those last because I want to enjoy them slowly, right? I'll eat what I don't really like quickly and then slowly enjoy the bits I want on the side of the plate. It's the old, but some people just like to, you know, get straight into their roast potatoes metaphor, or the Yorkshire pudding metaphor. For those Americans, they know what Yorkshire pudding is. It's a battered dish served, cooked in hot oil in an oven, served with a roast meal in the UK, in Australia, and in most sort of ex-colonial countries where the English were. So it's a very British dish. Those that are not sure about it, check it out. This isn't a cooking show, so I'll move quickly on from that metaphor. But what I'm trying to say is I have been to gigs where they've come out with their, like, right out the blocks, and it's been exciting, but at the same time I've got nothing to look forward to in some respects. And so that's what I'm saying. I really think I'm on that look forward to scenario. I mean, I look back on some of the gigs that I went to see, and I've been to many of them, but one of my favourites that I took my loved darling wife to see, well, we weren't married then, we were just dating then, way back in the midst of time, when dinosaurs ruled the earth. We went and saw Tim Paul Tudor at the Garage in Islington. And it's in London, of course, guys. And they opened with Swords of a Thousand Men, which was, you know, if you know that song, it's their big single. And it really got us sort of really pumping the old blood flow going. And the gig just kept, and it, of course, you know, from there on it was just hit after hit after hit. It did slow down towards the end when I didn't know some of the songs that he was bringing out, which I generally like in the middle of the set, because you need a time to take a breath. But opening songs. So this, as I said, so this first part of the show will be a sort of rundown of I thought I was going to do like a top 10, and then, you know, sort of end up with my favorite number one live song, opening song. I sort of thought that's not a great idea, because you know, my top 10 will be completely different to other people's top 10. So I'm just going to sort of go through 10 tracks, opening tracks to live albums, a little bit of history of each of the songs, and of course what makes a good live song. And then next week we will do a fantasy opening songs, because on retrospection, when you look at these live albums, a lot of these live albums, you know, like, and this came to my mind because Millsy sent me a list of songs that he thought would make good opening tracks to talk about, and a couple of them the band had never opened with that song, the songs that he mentioned. So I thought, wow, what about fantasy opening songs? You know, where could we go there? Because then you could choose any of their catalogue from any of their times that they played. Now, there's a couple of bands that that I sort of had hard times with, because bands with multiple lineups, particularly singers, not so much guitarists and band members, but mainly vocalists, I didn't know. I sort of danced around it, like Iron Maiden with Bruce Dickinson and Paul Di'Anno, and even you know, the sort of the dabbling they did, you know, in the early 2000s, not the early 2000s, the late 90s with Blaze Bailey. Where do you go there? Because you don't, you know, you might mention something, but someone goes, oh, what about this era? Same with Black Sabbath, you know, so many lineups. So what I've decided to do, I'm going with my favourite of those singers. I try to stay true with the first of the lineups, but it all comes down to, as I said, can you get it in? Can you listen to it easily? Is it available? And do I have it in my collection? So we're going to sort of go down that route. Now, I'm obviously going to jump out of the metal genre, as is my wont, and play around with some other sort of live stuff that I think you might enjoy yourself as well. But one of the main things that Millsy wanted me to talk about, and thank you for that suggestion, and anyone who does have any suggestions for the show, just reach out and send me a message in Facebook or even through Spotify Messenger there. You can sort of talk notes after the show. I'd love to get some ideas, because I'm happy to do this for people. And one of his caveats was that he wants to talk about the audience and participation part of the recording mix, and then sort of the quality of the and how the audience sounds when it's recorded, and are they reacting well? Is it a good mix? Do you feel part of the audience when you listen to it? And one of the more difficult ones to sort of negotiate for me, because again, as we may have discussed, as you might know, not all live albums are live albums. Some of the ones I'm going to talk about today and next week have been overdubbed, have been touched up, played around with, after the fact. Not all of them from the same concert most of the time, which also becomes a little bit more tricky because... a band, even though it's the same tour and the same lineup, the energy will be different from one show to the next. So that's always a tricky one. So I will be sort of dancing around that a bit, Millsy, for you. Sorry, mate. Best I can do with it, I'll do as best I can. But as I said, some of these albums that I'm going to talk about, these songs, if they've been overdubbed, I'll tell you. If I don't know they've not been overdubbed, like if I don't know and don't tell you, and you know differently, please do reach out and tell me. I mean, I can only go by the information that's available to me at my fingertips. There's only a couple in the list that I know of that were really sort of heavily tampered with in that respect. Quite a few and far between. One really curious one, which I'm really excited to get to, particularly this one, because I actually had no idea about this one at the time. I'd owned this particular album and listened to this particular song many, many times, and I did not know the true story behind it. So it's quite fascinating. So I'm looking forward to getting to that one with you. Now, also, when it comes to live experiences, my thing here. Right. I found it a little bit tricky because do I put in, if a song has been overdubbed and fiddled with, fiddled with is the wrong word, isn't it? But if it had been overdubbed or overproduced or remixed after the fact, is it really a live album? There's the crux of it, right? Because, I'm hitting the microphone with my glasses. There's a crux of it, because do we want to hear the dirty, raw, rock and roll sound of a live show that you get no matter who you see? Or do you want to hear the band like you would on a CD that's been cleaned up and polished and edited and mixed so that the audience is louder or quieter or errors are taken out? I don't know if I would. I think that sort of, for me, is a bit like, I don't know, it's a bit like a liar, isn't it? It's like lying to the audience. I mean, I had a friend at school, Justin listens to this show, I know he does. And he really did not like live albums. He just didn't enjoy them. He'd rather, you know, go straight to the, have a recorded. I mean, it might be different now. Justin might be different now, mate. But I remember when we were kids, you weren't a big fan, although you did give me Live After Death on double cassette, which was, yeah, life changing sort of thing for me. So I know that you weren't not a big fan. And my mate Dave is the same. He's not a big fan of live albums, and I don't get it. Sure, the way into any band for me was a live album. If I got the live album for the band first and listened to it, and if they came across as a genuine, exciting group of people who were just getting together making good music, and I not knowingly knew it was overdubbed or mixed, I would be excited. I'd go and get their studio albums. I mean, Marillion is one of the classic examples, and one of the very first, you know, albums I ever had of theirs was Reel to Reel, which I'll be talking about in this show. And it's not mixed or overdubbed. It's just them, and I find that, you know, I was so hooked by the quality of their live performance that I had listened to more and more of the albums. So, you know, it sort of goes. It goes without saying, really, that I think that the ultimate of a band's sort of, I don't know, of their quality is their live albums. I really think so. Should we tamper with them? As I said before, I don't think so. I think that if you don't like the live performance, don't put it out. If you're desperate, they're always going to be bootlegs. I mean, that's another thing. I'm not going to be mentioning bootlegs. There is one that's sort of borderline bootleg, which I'll mention. Because I have a lot of bootleg live albums, but as I said before, it's no good me saying, hey, listen to Marillion Live and, you know, wherever it was, and this song, opening track, blah, and you can't even get hold of it. Why would you even bother then? Sorry, the mic has just dropped it, if it sounds a bit low, sorry. You know, why would you bother? Because you just get a bit frustrated. I'm going to talk about this fantastic song that I know about, and you're going to go, well, I can't hear it. What's Tony talking about? I'll just skip. All right. Anyway, so that's it, really. That's the caveats for this episode. It's basically live opening songs. Some of them will not be the ones you expect. Some of them were not the ones I would have expected. Some of them are fascinating stories behind them. Some are straightforward. One is an absolutely, as I said before, it just blew my mind when I found this out. And I can't believe I didn't know this. And then, you know, we're going to go through roughly around about, if I can get to 10, I'll try. So I won't hang around too long on each of the tracks. And then, because I'm going to sort of give it a quick shout out. And then the following week will be the same concept again, but fantasy opening songs, fantasy live bands. There could be bands that are long gone, they could be bands that are new and I don't have any live recordings yet. And I'd love you if you got through to this episode this far and are still listening, thank you guys. Reach out, tell me before next week's episode if you've got any fantasy, it has to be the opening song, it could be any song from their catalogue, any song, but it has to be a song they would open with. It could be any era. And it could be any band, okay? I don't mind. Just reach out and say something and say what you think, and we can find and see if I can. If I haven't edited the show together, I can squeeze it in for next week's episode. Anyway, enough of me jibber jabbering for this part of the show, and I will come back and chat to you on the other side. Bye for now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back, guys, to part two. We're going to open up now with an absolute banger of a opening song. This is probably one of my favourite on the list. I'm going to come straight out of the gates with Deep Purple's Live in Japan. Now, this is recorded in Osaka on the 16th of August, 1972. October, at the Festival Hall and at Tokyo's Budokan, the famous Budokan, few days later. Now, when they arrived in Tokyo and in Japan, the Warner Brothers had given them an 8-track recording desk and not enough space. They were so that Martin Birch, the producer who was dealing with it, the classic and wonderful, brilliant Martin Birch, long may he rest in peace. The band thought, well, okay, well, we're not going to record this because why would we bother? And so they went on to record, they went on to play their gigs. And John Lords has come out afterwards and said, because they didn't think that they were being recorded, they were much more open, free, and improvisational. Now, I didn't come across that, and I didn't mention this in the first part, but I think sometimes when bands are recorded live, they know they're recording the show, you do sometimes get a little bit of more showmanship than you would imagine. I've been at gigs, where they've recorded it live, Maiden particularly. I couldn't tell the difference between what they would give out and what they wouldn't if they weren't recording. But there are, I'm sure, bands out there that sort of try a bit too hard, and it comes across that way. And it's probably why they need to overdub them and remix them. Anyway, they thought the second show was the better show. That's what John said. So that was the one that they used most of for the album. And it opens with Highway Star. Now, those that don't know Highway Star, well, it's an absolute classic. It's just a classic Deep Purple song. It's pumping, it's hard, it's heavy, it's fast. But as I said, I'm not going to review each song here. I'm just going to talk about what makes them good, and this one is that the audience on this is really, and for what's surprising is it's Japan in the 70s, for a country that's quite insular still, even now, even these days, and it doesn't really culturally blend as easily as other cultures do. It was quite surprising that they would go absolutely crazy, mad crazy apparently, in the audience for them. They turned up in Japan, and apparently there were people waiting outside the hotel rooms at 2 a.m. There were, you know, the crowds went, you know, unusual for Japan. And that comes across in the energy of the song, because John said that he does it in this particular track, which is 8 minutes. He does a lot of improvisational stuff, which that was what they were big on anyway. And it does come across that way. You feel the improvisational nature of it. And, you know, as we were discussing before, opening with a big track is, you know, is ballsy for me. And this is a big one. Opening with Highway Star, it's just... I mean, you couldn't open with Smoke on the Water. It'd be impossible. That's a showstopper, you know. And you couldn't do a Woman in Time. It's too, it's too stoppy starty. It's too slow. So I can see where they're getting the blood pumping with Highway Star. And when I do listen to that, I do think, Milsey's onto something here, you know, and Karen's onto something here. But that's that one, okay? So I'd love to know what you think about that. But yes, Live in Tokyo is just fabulous album. Many sorries, people. I've been saying Live in Japan. It's Made in Japan. Yeah. I'm recording this on New Year's Day, at the end of the day. It's been a big one. Pulling Christmas decorations down, doing some DIY, listen to music, trying to get my head around this for the episode, and Made in Japan, there you go. Now we're going to race into a similar era, because I generally think that the greatest live albums are of the early period. When I say early period, late 60s to very early 80s, that's so 70s basically. The next one coming for me is one of my... I did a whole episode on the best live albums of all time. This one was in my list, one of my favourite albums ever. And this one does questionably have overdubs on it. Say it quietly. It's got overdubs on it. And they say questionable because people... You know, some sources say they do, and some sources say they don't. And unfortunately, the lead singer is no longer with us to ask him, and he would be the one to tell you. I don't think anyone else would tell you that anyway. And that's Thin Lizzy's Live and Dangerous album from 1978, and the opening track is Jailbreak. Again, a big banger coming out of the gates here. He recorded... on the 14th of November in London, 1976, and in Toronto, in Canada. It was mixed. It was produced by Tony Visconti. Visconti. That's a biscuit, isn't it? Was that Biscotti? Tony Biscotti would be nice. He goes down with a cup of tea. Tony Visconti. They had no time to do a new album, apparently, according to the research. So they squeezed out a live album to give them some breathing space between albums, and thank God they did, because we get Live and Dangerous opening with the absolutely wonderful Jailbreak. Now that really is an opener. They could have opened with Whiskey in a Jarro. They could have opened with anything. You couldn't do Parisian Walkways, it's too long. It's also a showstopper as well. But they did Jailbreak. Now, this is where I get into sort of murky waters, because it may be, you can't tell if this is overdubbed or remixed, and I don't really care, to be brutally truthful, on this particular album. I didn't feel, once I learnt that nugget of information, and I've got a couple of versions of it. I've got an original release. I've also got a new Record Store Day one, which is the For Toronto concert, I believe, whereas this album is the mix of London and Toronto. It was the last album that had guitarist Brian Robson on, So that was an interesting little jaunt. Also with the Deep Purple, that was their last album. The last album with Ian Gillan and Roger Glover. So, you know, interesting there. Live album, and then people leave. Same here, live album, someone leaves. Interesting, eh? I hope that's not a pattern. Now, this one, when you listen to it, again, has the audience been, you know, pushed up in the mix to give it the, you know, the pizzazz that some of these live albums have? Probably. But it is a cracker of an opening. And again, on the Millsy meter, which we're going to start calling now, I've just coined it then, the Millsy meter, the audience is at around about 7. So you can really hear the audience enjoying themselves. And it's not a fake audience, it's not someone else's audience, it's not an American Laughter track, it is actually the audience. And I think this is where Phil Lynott's at his peak. I really mean this. I think this is this whole album, but this particular opening track really stamps his huge persona on rock and roll. Right there and then, you know, right at a time when he desperately needed it. So, brilliant second opener, all right? And then we're going to move on to... Remember I said to you before that one was a little bit... It surprised me and it took me by surprise. Is that the right thing? Yeah, surprised me, took me by surprise. but Slayer... Now, Slayer, as you know, one of my favourite bands of all time. I've seen them in every live show they've done since Reign of Blood. On every tour, sorry, not every live show, but every tour they've been on. And they don't have a lot of early live albums. Okay, of course, they have this one particular one, which is Live Undead, which I have on picture disc, German print, Japanese print, English print, Australian print, and I'm reissue. All of them sound amazing, by the way. Now, this one, for the life of me, when I play it, it has... I put a big note here saying, re-listen closely. Because they said that it was recorded live at a show with a few people at the show. But it's come out subsequently that... It was actually, they had the radio station, WBAB, Finger Metal radio station, Finger Metal Shop radio station, had a competition to come and hang out with the band and listen to them play and record. And those that won, it was about a handful, between 12 to 14 people, they basically went and listened to them record the live album, Live Undead, at the Tiki Recording Studios in Glen Cove, New York City. Now, if you listen to the recording, it sounds like there's a lot more people in the audience. It sounds like a much bigger venue, and it does not sound like it's being recorded like in front of a... You know, like, where's the grey area? Is it a live album, or is it recorded live in front of people? As in... The album itself was recorded live, not captured live in front of a live audience. And that's the one that I put a big question mark on, but I've also put in big red letters, I don't care, I really like it. And they open up with Spirit in Black. So not the big numbers, as Millsy did say, you know, he thought something would be like South of Heaven or something. No. I think this is the stamper in the sand. This is the marker, the line in the sand, sorry, the stamp, you know, saying, hey, this is us, this is the sound, this is a brand new sound, a really new metal concept, and it's cheeky. It's a cheeky little live album, but when you listen to it now, you can't listen and say to yourself, hey, Tony, that's a live album, because it really isn't a live album. It's basically they recorded the EP or the album with people like, you know, coming to listen to it. It wasn't at a venue as such, which again, that's fine, but it's It's raw, it's rough, it's ready, it's early Slayer, which is something I love. It's that sort of mixture of punk and heavy metal and aggression and a DIY attitude and excuse me, I'm going to swear here, the fuck you attitude. You know, there's something that I love deeply about this form of music that we listen to. So that was one that's, you know, a bit of a grey area there, is it? So that's, and again, the song is not a banging opening song. Okay, because it's not a live album as such. I picked it as a live album because it's the one I have. And on after researching, I realised it wasn't truly a live album. But I had to put it in the list because I wanted to prove to your point that not all is what it seems in the, you know, in the world of live albums. And then we're going to move on to a really difficult one. Now, this is a very difficult one for me. This is Iron Maiden. Now, we all know, let's not beat about the bush here, we all know how much I bloody love, and we all bloody love Iron Maiden. And there are so many live albums, and so many live bootlegs I have. Many, many, many of them. Would I say I have a plethora? I have a plethora of them. So I decided to go with the classic, the greatest live album of them all, Iron Maiden's Live After Death. Now, what I loved about this is technically not the opening song, is not, it's the speech from, it's the Churchill speech, but let's go with the first actual piece of music track, all right? And we know, we all know, with our, you know, we could sing it in our sleep, okay? We all know what that track is going to be. I'm going to give you a second to try and sort of see if you can shout out loudly with me what it is. That's right, you can calm down. Yes, it's Aces High. And what a, again, I know, I think this journey we're going on with live opening songs, all being bangers at this moment, could be turning my opinion. Recorded between the 14th and 17th of March. They decided that this it was recorded in on the Hammersmith Odeon and at Long Beach Arena in America. And now we all know the classic Scream for Me, right? Long Beach, right? Now the opening song, as I said, was recorded, it comes on the first and third sides of the album. They both, so the first part of the album and the third side of the album were recorded at Hammersmith Odeon. The band originally wanted all of the Live After Death to be from the Hammersmith Odeon. It was never going to be Long Beach as well. It was because that Bruce and the band thought the best and most exciting music actually was all recorded there. But there was a bit of a problem between the lighting guys and the sound guys and the video guys, so that when they recorded it, because Steve Harris adamantly will not overdub anything, and God love him for it, everything is live and that's how it is, because of that there was issues, and so we couldn't do the live video because it was a roll-in video, so they had to use bits and pieces so they could link together the video to make it live, so they could sell the package of the video with the album, which was fair enough. I get it. I'd love to know if anyone's got the full Hammersmith Odeon set though, and I'm sure it's out there somewhere, and I may be missing it. I don't know, something I haven't seen, but I'm sure it's out there. I'm sure my good friend Matt has got it. I'm sure he has. In fact, I definitely know he has, I'm sure. It, for me, it's the best stepping stone album for live music, for live metal. I think if you're going, oh, I'm going to listen to a live album, but I don't know where to start. Live After Death is the one to step into because it captures the audience on the Millsy meter. It's a 9, right? It's got this absolute, you know, you get taken on the journey. And I'm really happy that Aces High is from the Hammersmith Odeon set, because that's, you know, the home of rock and roll in London. Well, it was for a long, long time. And I think the band really deep down are very proud of their roots and heritage, and they would love it to have been there. But hey, you know, it doesn't matter. It still came out to be one of the greatest albums of all time, live, okay? And again, they use this album as a stepping stone, give them some breathing space between Seventh Son, before they recorded Seventh Son. So it was good to give them a little bit of air, a breathing space. I don't think they would realize that it would be as big as it became. Again, it's this sort of pattern of giving a breathing space, live album, tour, album, tour, live album, space, new album. I don't think that, again, is something that happens that much more these days. It used to happen a lot, as you can tell by the notes. Again, never overdubbed. And this is one of the best opening tracks of them all, because it captures one of the greatest bands in history at their peak, at their very, very, very best, in my opinion. Speaking of the great bands and the greatest bands, here comes one. Now, when I say this, you're all going to look at me. I'm sure there are fans of this band out there going, what? You didn't do this? You didn't say that? You didn't say this album? What? This one's a bit of controversial. Not as controversial, maybe a bit controversial, not as controversial as the Slayer album. This is Black Sabbath's Live at Last, 1980. It was an album that was recorded against the band and released against the band's will, because the manager at the time, Patrick Meehan, had the rights to the music and thought it would make a good option to get out, get some money, chuck it out there. Now, it is available on Spotify. It did come out on the box set for Volume 4, because it's the tour it was based on. It was for and around. It charted. It got number 8 in the UK. It is an official bootleg album, but the band don't officially recognise it. But I think this sort of grabs, again, like the Maiden track before we just mentioned, it has the real ballsy, strong live, and it's not the song that you would expect, okay? It is actually, you know, again, this is the, everyone thinks that they open with War Pigs, and I think those that have gone to see Judas Priest live, and there are many of us, they always have, before the band come out, they play War Pigs. And I think that there is this sort of Mandela effect, that people think that all Black Sabbath gigs open with War Pigs. And that, again, would, why play your greatest hit right out of the gates? I mean, Iron Maiden's greatest hit is arguably Run to the Hills or Number of the Beast. It's not going to be Aces High. Same with Deep Purple. It's not going to be, it's not going to be Smoke on the Water. Thin Lizzy, it wouldn't open with Boys Are Back in Town, right? Or would they? But anyway, so they opened the song with Tomorrow's Dreams, which is on the Volume 4 album. It was recorded at the Rainbow Theatre in North London. Not far from where I grew up, actually. Most of the big bands played there at one time or another. On the 11th of March 1973. So I was 7 days away from being among us all here. Ah, isn't that lovely? 51 years coming up since it was recorded. Quite crazy when you think about it. So I love it because, again, on the Millsy meter, it's sort of about a 6 or 7. It's not like, it hasn't got the strongest audience recording reaction to it, but I think it's got one of the best Aussie vocals on this live album. And I say it because I think they were not conscious. They were getting recorded. They just went along, you know, just played as they normally would you know, gave them that freedom. Now, as I said before, someone might shake their fist at me and go, what about the DOE years? What about the Martin years? What about this and what about that? Look, I haven't got infinite time, so I can't go through every single one. I may choose one of those for my fantasy opening songs. Who knows? We'll find out next week, won't we? But yes, that is Black Sabbath's Live at Last, 1980, unofficial bootleg. Official bootleg, and it's very strange. No overdubs, completely as it was. Black Sabbath, Volume 4 tour, which I think is one of the greatest. Oop, I hit the mic. I'm going to go and get a drink now, and I will be back with some more of my favourite opening songs for the opening of the year. Bye for now. I'm back. Do you hear that seamless edit? I actually went downstairs, got myself an ice cream, had a nice little drink, and come back again. Hey, the wonderfulness of the internet. Anyway, so I hope you're enjoying this. It really sort of opened my eyes slightly into all those years of listening to live albums, that things aren't quite the same. His next one here is something that, again, this is from my collection. So these records are from my collection, okay? That's why there's a few of them, but I've sort of filtered them out a few. But Judas Priest's Unleash in the East, which is unfortunately being dubbed Unleash in the Studio, which again, I had no idea. Gosh, I thought I knew my stuff. On the research there, Rob Halford in an interview much later on has said that when they recorded the album, the vocals were recorded really poorly in the live context. So he recorded the vocals in a studio in a, and I'm going to air mark question marks here, in a live reproduction of a live feel in a studio. It is one of the, and okay, they open with one of the early sort of versions of speed metal that there is, Exciter from the album Stained Class. Brilliant, brilliant album. And I've seen Priest live many, many times, and they've opened with all sorts of different tracks. I mean, when I saw them do the whole of Nostradamus, they didn't open with anything new. They didn't play anything new at all. They basically played, I think they opened up the whole first side of the album of Nostradamus, then they went into classic tracks, right? Some time ago now. I feel a bit sort of cheated slightly on this particular album. Sorry, Rob, if you're hearing this. I don't mean cheat. You didn't cheat me. It's just that I didn't know this. Like, for years, I thought the vocal on this particular recording, which is one of my favourite live albums as well, again, for my live selection. I have a section in my record collection called Live. I have all my live albums. I thought, wow, this is some of the best vocals. I mean, this is naive, Mr. Heavy Metal Tones naivety when he was younger, thinking this was an absolute banger of a vocal line. And it turns out that it was overdubbed afterwards anyway. Now, you're going to say, Tony, there are lots and lots and lots of good Priest live albums. Yes, there are. But this is the one that I have in my... Well, I've got a few of them, but this is the one that I consider classic lineup Priest, okay? And yeah, open up with Exciter. Again, I'm going to say on the Museometer, or Museometer, I keep changing the name of it, it's around about 6 for the audience participation in the background. Again, it's Asia, so it's, you know, surprisingly how loud they are. The band is, as always and always will be, a class act live, and so opening again, I don't think Exciter is my favorite Priest song, but they're not opening with Breaking the Law, are they, or Metal Gods or anything like that. They're opening with, you know, a relatively well-known song. This one is not a banger. This one is not a jumping out at you the greatest song they ever wrote kind of thing. So sort of, you can see, I see myself going, I get it. I get that I quite like now the idea of having a quite lower level known song to start with. But as I said before, I think I'm coming around to the fact that I think an opening track should be a banging one. Hey, you know, that's what this is. This on a journey with me, I'm growing as well, as they say. And then we're going to move to, and are you going to say, I'm glad you didn't miss this one. This is Motorhead's Ace of Spades on the No Sleep to Hammersmith album. What an absolute masterwork of a live album this is. The packaging, they'd had three albums out before, hadn't made any money with it. Typical sort of punk, early punk sort of metal ethos where taking a ride by the manager. And you know, they have some success in America, and they released this album, which took them, I think, stratospherically, in my opinion. People say differently, but I think this is the one that really took them different places, because people could hear the thundering madness that is Motorhead. And this one's recorded on the 7th of February to the 20th of April 1980, and the 28th of March to the 30th of March 1981, over several locations up and down the UK, on the A Short Sharp Pain in the Neck tour. And this is 10 on the Milzeometer. 10, 10, 10. The audience is ravenous. It is beautifully mixed. You can feel like you're a part of the crowd. You know, it's thunderous. Opens with an absolute top 10 banger, Ace of Spades. There is no, with Motorhead, there is no in between. You're going to get, it's all killer, no filler. It's all pace, it's all fast, it's all angry, it's all rock and roll, it's all dirty. You feel like you're going to catch something just looking at his mic. But you don't care, because it's sort of like the darker, seedier side of rock and roll, the side of rock and roll that we all really secretly deep down want and know and love and would love to be part of, but, you know, just can't be, because it's only for those certain few that want to party hard and die young, sadly. Yes, so brilliant. And again, no overdubs according to the notes I've read, but hey, I mean, you know, I'm sure that there are some secrets going on with some of these live albums, but differently to the Judas Priest album, it feels live. It feels like the mics could just cut out any moment, or an audience member might jump on the stage, or Lemmy might forget a lyric, or you know, or Animal might just sort of completely go off rhythm with the drums. Who knows? It's absolutely brilliant. If I was going to do it in like a countdown, it would probably be in my number one, to be honest with you. But we're going to move on to one that was mentioned for that was asked for by Millsy, because this show is dedicated to his, he asked me for it. So he's a huge Queen fan. Now, I'm not a massive Queen fan. I don't want to offend Queen fans. I do love Queen. It's just they're for me, they're a contentious band for me, okay? Either way, wonderful band. You know, rock and roll would be a sad place without them. And of course, we're going to talk about the classic, We Will Rock You, all right, from Live Killers. This particular opening, I think this sort of rivals Motorhead for the Milzeometer 10 for the audience, because Queen always knew how to pull its audience in, how to grab it straight away, and this one really is. This is a real, we're going to have a party song. This open up because we're going to really let go tonight kind of song. There's no build up here. There's no stepping stones, no mucking around. This is solid gold right from the moment. And this album is, it's the only Queen album I actually have in my collection, physical Queen album. And I can see why people like Millsy and my mate John, and they love this stuff so much, because it really is heart pumpingly brilliant, you know, from the minute that it starts to the minute it finishes. is recorded live during the European leg of their jazz tour between 26th of January and the 1st of March 1979. Now, here we go here. The album was self-produced by the band and was their first to be mixed at their own studios, Mountain Studios in Montreux, Switzerland. Guitarist Brian May and drummer Roger Taylor later revealed the US radio show in the studio that... later revealed on the US radio show in the studio with Redbeard, which spotlighted the making of 1980s The Game, that the band had mixed Live Killers themselves and were unhappy with the final mix. You know what? Some of those unhappy stances are good, aren't they? It's funny, isn't it? It's like Steve Harris hates the first Iron Maiden now, but I actually bloody love it. He doesn't like the way it's mixed, but, you know, I suppose we're all... we're all our own worst critics, aren't we? Now, track listing. So it opens up with We Will Rock You, as I said. And that was recorded in Lyon on the 17th of February. It's a brilliant, brilliant anthemic song. Yes, I know it's been mixed, and we talk about things not being mixed, but you're a band as big as Queen. You don't want to put out stuff that may sort of, I don't know. I mean, I'm getting into tricky waters here by saying that, do you really want to, if you're a really sort of heritage band, do you want your music to sound raw, or do you want it to be clean and polished? It's a difficult one, eh? That's something that we might talk about later on. There were some songs that were omitted from the live album, though, from the tour, which was Somebody to Love, Fat Bottom Girls, If You Can't Beat Them and It's Late, which is a shame because I think they're, again, Fat Bottom Girls, one of my favourite songs of Queen's. They had quite a few singles off it. It charted very well. I mean, in the UK, where did it get? It got to 3 in the UK, as you'd expect with Queen. You know, the jazz tour was really popular. Brilliant, brilliant masters of the live audience, you know, the whole lot of them. And, Freddie, he knew how to control an audience. He had it from the moment that he walked onto that stage to the moment he left. You were in his complete command. And that's what made a good opening live song, because you knew, anticipated he was going to take you on a good show. And coming to the end of the show here, guys, but... we're going to now talk about slightly more sedate. We're going to move away from the world of heavy rock and heavy metal, and we're going to talk about some prog. Hey, my favourite four-letter word. And Marillion's Reel to Reel, which was the first, as I said before, was the first Marillion live album I'd heard. And it was something that I felt really, really... emphasized their live show. It sort of came at a time when the band, some people say, is it too early for a live album, right? Because it only really released two albums. Was it too early for a live album? I don't know if that's the case. I think that live albums can come out any time. I think they just complement your recorded studio work. Just helps, as I said, helps an audience get to know what the band is like live, because let's be honest, how often are we going to get to see original Queen or original Motorhead or original Black Sabbath or Deep Purple? Some people have been lucky, and I know there are people out there who I have, good friends of mine, have had that privilege, but there are now new audiences that don't have that, but they can reach out and listen to a sample of great live rock and roll and heavy metal and whatever. So for me, yeah, I don't think it was too early. It was recorded at the De Montfort Hall in Leicester between the 19th and 20th of June 1984 and the Spectrum, Montreal, Canada. It had two songs each from the first two albums, Script for Justice, Tear and Fugazi. The original LP version contained two tracks previously not available on any albums, the A-side of the band's 1982 debut single, Market Square Heroes, and Cinderella Search, the B-side of Assassin, recording at the Spectrum Emerald Lies. At the Spectrum Emerald Lies from Fugazi, it was originally on a bonus track on the CD and cassette version, which I have. Now, it is released. The opening track is Assassin, right? Recorded in Montreal, not in the UK. And on the Millsy meter, it's up there, I reckon about an 8, because it builds and it builds and it builds. As the song opens, it builds with that fantastic Ian Mosley floor tom work, and Fish's dramatic opening lyrical attack. But it sort of builds from silence to aggression, really, as what Marillion do very, very well, and what prog is very good at, is that building of atmosphere. It's not about simple gratifications, it's about a longer journey, and that's what you get with Assassin. And the audience in this one, Canada, it was an interesting tour, because it was a tour they were on the same bill as they were supporting Rush, but the roadies hated them, so they would often like give them poor equipment, not plug them in properly, you know, make delay them, do all sorts of stuff to make them look bad. They got them drunk before shows. They did all sorts of stuff. It's well documented. I have mentioned about this before in a previous show. And by the way, this is not what Rush would have asked for. They love the band. They wouldn't have asked them to tour with them if they didn't. But the professionals that they are, this album and the opening track, Assassin, it does not sound like they are underperforming or badly recorded, or the mics don't work, or any of the guitar. Like, I heard that there's rumours that the guitars are in different cities, that the amps didn't turn up, all this sort of stuff. You know, the roadies would only work certain hours, they wouldn't set up prop for them, they had to set themselves up. All this kind of crap, but it doesn't come across in the live production. In fact, you know, memory is for me, this lying on my bed as a 13-year-old. I share a bedroom with my brother, and you know, headphones in. I had the bed under the window, and I'd be lying there in the moonlight, looking out of the windows at the street lights, the big street lights outside our house in London, where they, you know, you've got the, you know, bright light even at midnight, sort of thing. You had to close your blinds to get any kind of your curtains to get any kind of sleep, but you got used to it. And we're lying there looking out a bit and listening to this album, and just thinking, I really, 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 really want to see this band live so bad. Sadly, I never got to see them with Fish, because he left in 1989/90, and that was when I was, you know, leaving school and making money and buying concert tickets. And anyway, that's a different episode. But this one is really, is it their best song? No, it is not. Is it a great opener? Yes, it is. This to me is exactly what I was saying earlier. It's a build-up song. It's a build-up song. And I think that's what I find brilliant about this particular track. And what makes me think why I like songs that are opening songs at concerts that aren't straight away bangers. I think I like the build-up of tension. But then on reflection, maybe that's because I'm seeing a prog band. Maybe if I think about it deep down, and I went to see Iron Maiden, and we'll give away what I think their fantasy opening would be next week. But imagine that they, you know, when they saw something different, was a different song that I wanted to sing, you know, about their big hit straight away. How would I feel? How would I feel if I saw Marillion and straight away they came out with, you know, a Kaylee or Market Square Heroes, you know, or Fugazi, opening with songs like that? I don't know where you go from there with bands like that. So that's why I'm telling you that the build up for this this song is what. Sorry, I'm scratching my itchy back. Sorry. Well, I didn't mean to give that away. Scratch, itchy back. Live radio, folks. Live radio. I just think that. I think that's where my thought pattern comes from, is because I'm so used to Reel to Reel as an album and the way that it builds to this sort of crescendo at the end, and all the big hits come sort of in the middle of it, and then it ends with Market Square. With Forgotten Sons, which is my favourite Marillion song of them all. I'm not quite sure. Is it my favourite? No, it's not. It's my favourite of the big numbers. I think Tuck Song is my favourite. But anyway, we've discussed this before. I'm not going to go back discussing it again. Well, I will do, because I like to, but that's a different day. So, I'm going to stop there, because I did have Metallica on my list to talk about. But that one was quite controversial for me, because I haven't got a Metallica live album that's got Cliff Burton on it. So I don't want to do. I mean, another thing that Millsy mentioned, he did mention, you know, opening with Enter the Sandman, which they do on some of their live tours. Again, it's a song that everyone knows. It's a song that makes the neutral get into the show. And that's something probably I haven't talked about. Maybe you do open with a banger because you want to draw the neutrals in. But how many neutrals are actually there? Who's going to fold over, hand over the folding stuff? You know, the readies, the dosh, the denarii, the shekels, the dollars, the, you know, the rupees, whatever. Who's going to hand those over to a band they've never really heard? I mean, I don't think people do that anymore, because people instantly will now go on to. Spotify and other streaming platforms are available, and listen to the band first before they go, and they'll hear the big hits. And so that's what, you know, I don't know, I just don't think people are willing to take a chance on live music anymore. They'd rather know what they're getting into, which is a bit of a, you know, I don't know, I find that quite sad. Because, you know, I've shelled out money for bands I'd never even heard of, and had absolutely fantastic times. I've also shelled out money for bands I've never heard of, and wished that I'd stayed at home with a cup of tea and a biscuit. But you know, hey, it's more the latter, you know. Anyway, latter, is that the one before? I can never remember what latter is. You know, in some countries, the latter is a coffee. I'd like a soy latte, please. Extra froth. That's me. I'm done. It's been a long day. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I knew it is an interesting subject. I sort of think I've got my head around it. I think I know what I'm trying to say. I think hopefully I've given Millsy what he needed, what he was waiting for or looking for. But of course, there is part two of this show. And that will be the fantasy opening songs. And with that, we can reach into all sorts of bands, not just record bands that I have live albums for. So, where will we go in that one? That one could be a bit more interesting, because we're not restrained by fact. We are living in a world of fantasy, which some people say I might do anyway, but, you know. Who cares? Time now for me to go and pour myself a little single malt and read a book or two. Anyway, hope you enjoyed the show. Thanks for listening. It's been really nice to actually chat, because of the fact that the last couple of weeks I've had to do, you know, been on holiday, so I haven't had a chance to record. So it's really nice to get the old words out. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying now? See? You know what I mean? It's just nice to chat. Be safe. Be good. Talk to you next week, when we'll have our fantasy opening songs. And I'd love, as I said, please do reach out and tell me what yours would be, because I'd love to know. And if I have, obviously, there's lots and lots and lots of bands I've missed. I've just wanted to grab some of the ones I have, some of the ones you might have as well. And I mean, I could be here all night with this if I kept it up, but you and me know that I've already yammered on for over an hour. So bye for now, guys.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.